Let's go.
Welcome to Noise and Notes, WFPL's politics podcast. I'm Philip Bailey, WFPL's political editor, and my guest today is Michael Duffy, executive editor of Time Magazine, who is the co-author of a new book entitled The President's Club, Inside the World's Most Exclusive Fraternity. If you're a history buff, political junkie, or a general nerd, you'll love this book. It's about the private relationships, the alliances, and sometimes the acrimony between modern presidents. Mr. Duffy, how are you today?
I'm great. Nice to be here.
Let's just jump right into it. What is it about the American presidency that creates a fraternity among these men who are not just political rivals, who have been political rivals, but in many cases, they're competitors in history?
Yeah, I think they all come out of the job as with some scars, with some regrets. And they carry them for a very long time. You know, we're electing our presidents younger. They're sometimes being tossed out of office sooner. And they're living longer than they have in quite some time. And this creates for them almost a second career of being an ex-president. It's not easy being an ex-president. Most people want you to get off the stage. But once you get off there, you're left with all kinds of, you know, you don't have a lot to do. And there are not a lot of people you can call peers. And so in this place, this space, they find against all odds and across age and party some solace.
I would think that in many ways they're like, this is the most unique position in American politics. There's no one else who knows what you're going through. And it seems that in reading your book, it washes away any old beef, any sort of acrimony between the men, and sort of like boxers who may have had these great battles with each other, but at the end of the day, they know what it's like, and there is a sort of respect that's gained between all of them.
Yeah, there is, and they also have something in common with these other men who they have no one else. You know, whether it's their kids or their spouses or their friends, no one else can really understand what it's like to have done that, to be criticized for virtually every decision you make from all sides. And then to carry that with you for the rest of your life.
Is it lonely? Does that make them lonely individuals?
I think the job is intensely lonely because at the end of, you know, every day or the beginning of every day, you have to make five hard calls. And you're stuck with them. There's, you know, there's no one else is going to pick up that check. You are. You know, you do that for 4 or 5 years and your hair gets gray and you know, it's not easy. Now, these men ask for it. I'm not trying to be sympathetic to them. But I think that in the context of that kind of a life, they do find among these guys, as George Herbert Walker Bush told us, an understanding that, you know, we don't have to – among each other, we don't have to explain ourselves. And I think that most of the time they do.
Among the current club, you have former President Jimmy Carter, former President George H.W. Bush, former President Clinton, now former President George W. Bush. It seems that among that club currently, that HW has taken on the role of the elder in the group. He's a father figure to, obviously, former President George W. Bush, but also sort of a father figure to Bill Clinton and to Barack Obama.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right. I think you're really right. I think he has three sons. Two of them are surrogates. Obama has reached out to Bush 41 more than anyone else. Clinton clearly sees him as a sort of replacement father and has modeled his ex-presidency as much on Bush as on Carter. And, of course, in the case of W., it is his actual father. And the other way to pair them up is – and don't forget Jimmy Carter. Bush 1 and Carter are born – they're both 87, both born in 24. They're only about 6 months apart. They otherwise have very little in common. Whereas Clinton and W, I call him W here for the purposes of shorthand, are only born 6 weeks apart. They're the two closest in history. And they have become sort of friends. They certainly are kind of business partners. They go on the road and do these speaking gigs together. That's a first for the club. If they don't talk regularly, their aides talk a lot. And they really do operate as a group in some cases.
Is that because in HW's case, is that because he's probably had to, among more than any other, swallow his pride in the sense that he lost to Clinton? When W became president, he sort of had to defer to him publicly in a lot of cases when people asked him about his son's decision making. And he was also a one-term president. Do one-term presidents have maybe a different relationship to the club than their two-term brethren?
Yeah. I think they have more to prove. Certainly Carter came out of office, you know, and spent the next 35, 33 years proving that he, you know, and we'll say, is a better ex-president than he was president. Bush, 41, is the oldest and has known the most presidents, was in that circle for 25 or 30 years before he himself became president. But I also think that these are men who have helped each other both while they were in office, and this is to some extent an extension. I think Clinton and Bush 43W talked a lot more in that second term than people realized. So it's a very interesting club at the moment. It's not as big as Clinton's, which had five ex-presidents. But I also think this is going to be a group that's going to have some influence going forward, especially if Clinton and 43 can work out some kind of arrangement.
The club also plays a role in rehabilitation. Richard Nixon obviously tried to do that with Reagan, with Bill Clinton. But it's worked a little bit differently for Jimmy Carter. In your book, you talk about how Carter sort of went rogue, particularly with HW's presidency. Why has Carter taken a wholly different relationship to being an ex-president than Nixon took? Obviously, they had two different presidencies, but Carter's doing his own thing.
Both Nixon and Carter are the most difficult members of the club. Nixon, because he was so – both men have been desperate to rehabilitate themselves after difficult presidencies. Carter has an additional – Nixon wanted to be in the policy mix. He wanted to be part of the conversation. He wanted to affect the course of events when he was making his comeback after resigning. Carter's different. Carter just wants to get stuff done. You know, he's the one who does Habitat. He's the one who goes overseas and, you know, works out, you know, proposals for solving river blindness in this country and political strife in that. He's just a very energetic person, but he also believes his way is always the best. And so this makes him a hard partner for
the
president.
In the book, you talk about how during the lead up to the first Gulf War,
right,
Carter writes a letter to foreign leaders across the world,
yeah,
basically discouraging them and petitioning, yeah, them to go against the war, basically to go against the sitting president.
He comes very close to committing treason by lobbying members of the U.S. coalition who were then aligned against Saddam Hussein to not go to war, which just drove Bush 1 crazy. And they told him to shut down and stop, but he kept going. Carter was also a handful for Clinton. Clinton sent Carter overseas a number of times, and Carter usually got the job done, but he did it with so much trouble it was almost questionable in terms of whether it was worth it. Whereas Nixon was just working constantly behind the scenes certainly against Bush, to some extent against Reagan. On the other hand, he really helped Bill Clinton. Nixon and Clinton were these kind of unlikely allies for the first year and a half of Clinton's presidency, and Clinton told us when we talked to him that Nixon wrote him a letter in his final month of life that Clinton still takes out every year and rereads. It was so useful, so helpful.
Even in the body language, when back in January 2009, when all the presidents got together in the club, you could even see the fact that Carter was sort of off in the corner of the picture. What's President Obama's relationship to the current club?
Well, as usual, they have all tried to help him in their own way. George W. Bush has done what he can just to not say anything, to stay silent. That's the sort of courtesy he pays the new president, and he learned that from his father. Clinton has tried constantly to help, and for months Obama didn't want it. He didn't want to have anything to do with Clinton. He wanted him to get off the stage. He wanted him to disappear, and even when Clinton was being helpful, he didn't get a lot of credit for it. As Obama's troubles have increased and he's gotten his own hands dirty with government, Clinton and Obama have become closer, though I wouldn't say they were yet close. Obama has very much tried to become close to George Herbert Walker Bush, Carter less so.
As a final question, how does President Obama's history-making presidency, being the first African-American in the Oval Office, how does that affect the club at all?
Well, I think all of members of the club knew that Barack Obama was on the verge of changing America dramatically when he was elected in 2008. And they all, I am certain, even George Walker Bush, knew that this was a great moment for the country, without question. And there's plenty of evidence of that. But they also know from having been presidents themselves that every man gets in there and wants to do it himself, do it his way, and that inevitably they're going to need help. So I think at the time they said, we're here. We're ready when you want us. Each one has had to wait different times to be asked for assistance. He has asked all of them now, usually secretly, to lend a hand in one thing or another. But this is not a group that he has brought back together since that first time in 2009.
Fascinating. And a great read, too, Michael Duffy.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
You bet.
One of the few interesting elections in the region this year is the Republican primary for Kentucky's 4th Congressional District. The redrawn district now includes parts of Louisville's East End as well. Here to talk about the GOP battle royale is Kentucky Public Radio's Kenny Colston. Kenny, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
Pretty good. Now, in this 7-way GOP primary, we have, of course, the front runners being to replace Congressman Jeff Davis of Kentucky as State Representative Alicia Webb Edgington, Boone County Judge Executive Gary Moore, and Lewis County Judge Executive Thomas Massey. Now, everyone assumed Massey was the favorite with his Tea Party connections. Obviously, he has some connections to Senator Rand Paul. But earlier this week, Webb Edgington got a boost. What happened?
Basically, the outgoing congressman, Jeff Davis, decided to endorse her, really giving some life to her campaign. She was by far third when it came to the latest fundraising report, was on the edge of actually falling to the lower tier with the, you know, other four candidates in that GOP primary. She gets a boost from Davis' endorsement. She also got the endorsement of former Senator Jim Bunning. I don't know that that endorsement is as strong. You know, Bunning went out, kind of flamed out, couldn't raise money, didn't have a lot of say these last couple ones, although some people would say that his endorsement of Rand Paul to take his place was very influential. So two big endorsements in the Northern Kentucky area.
Does the Webb Edgington endorsements, because you're right, Bunning by himself would actually sort of be bad for Webb Edgington in some aspects, but we're in a GOP primary here. So is it a double hit for her in the sense that she gets Bunning, who gives her the base, and she gets Davis, who gives her the establishment and probably some more campaign financing and fundraising capabilities than she had before?
It definitely helps. I mean, she was on the verge of being knocked out or being irrelevant and it being a two-person race. Now she has some life. Whether that means she gets a lot of fundraising, you know, that's to be seen. Obviously, Bunning had trouble with fundraising at the end. Davis has said that he really doesn't like to fundraise a whole lot, and a lot of his staffers were already working for Webb Edgington. So it's a news bump. I mean, if she can get some money and put some ads behind it, it'll be a significant bump for her. But for right now, it's definitely something, you know, post-session, a little bit before Derby, that gets her name out there more than what it was currently.
Because, and I'm thinking at first, we didn't think that Davis was going to endorse anyone. He pretty much said he was going to stay neutral. Did that Massey ad? Massey had an ad out a few weeks ago that used a floor speech by Davis, using him, sort of complimenting Massey, but not really endorsing him. It was a different conversation altogether. He used that in an ad. The congressman's wife and the congressman came out against it. Did that force Davis to say, hey, listen, here's who I really do support, constituents?
Yeah, I think that played a major role. And then also yesterday, maybe over the weekend, something else that happened was that Massey on his website said that the Rains Act, which is actually Jeff Davis's big legislation he's been trying to get passed by both chambers, which deals with a lot of regulations, the author of that bill endorses Thomas Massey. Well, on first blush, that would make everyone think that Jeff Davis was endorsing Thomas Massey. Actually, it was someone in Northern Kentucky who helped Davis write the bill or, you know, approved it for his local county. Davis adopted it for the federal government. So Massey has consistently tried to provoke Davis to endorse in the race, finally did enough to get Davis to do so. And now he's hoping that all these, you know, I guess provoking him, Davis and Bunning's endorsement will now bring his heavy hitter into the race, which is Senator Rand Paul.
The AP came out obviously today and said, you know, Senator Paul is upset, at least his chief of staff said that Senator Paul is upset with the fact that Davis and Bunning have now come out for Webb Edgington. Paul said he was going to stay neutral. He could potentially come out for Massey. Where does that leave Gary Moore?
I think Gary Moore, obviously, he was the top of the fundraising. He comes from the largest county, a longtime judge executive. He's not exactly, I wouldn't say he's exactly flip roles with Webb Edgington, but yesterday wasn't a good day for him, obviously, in his campaign. That being said, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if this becomes an endorsement war. I don't think Gary Moore gets left out.
Who's left? I mean, McConnell's not going to get involved in this, is he?
Well, you know, people didn't think McConnell was going to get involved in 2010. I mean, I don't think McConnell is a Tea Party guy, despite his growing relationship with Senator Rand Paul. It remains to be seen whether he would endorse Alicia Webb Edgington if she does not get a significant bump from this. So if he doesn't want Thomas Massie in Congress, you have to remember McConnell relies heavily on Northern Kentucky when he runs statewide. That is the solid Republican area in Kentucky.
So isn't it best for maybe McConnell to stay out of this and not win but not lose?
Well, that's a point. You also have a lot – it's a congressional race. You have a lot of out-of-state people that can get involved. Gary Moore was the only person who was endorsed by Northern Kentucky Right to Life. That's a big pro-life endorsement up there. It will carry a lot of votes. It could also bring some outside endorsements. Because of that, a lot of national figures who endorse solely on Right to Life issues, that kind of evangelical social those type of voters and those type of endorsements. I wouldn't say he's down for the count yet, but yesterday definitely wasn't a good day for Gary Moore.
Kenny, thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Noise and Notes is produced by WFPL. For more information, visit WFPL.org.